Welcome back to another edition of the PigX Podcast. I'm your host, Delaney Howell. Having a reliable labor force on the farm is nearly as important as swine health itself. But what are your options when your local labor force may not be able to supply you with all the help you need? Turning to international workers could be a viable option, according to Rachel Beardsley, partner with Fragaman. While sorting through visa options or trying to hire international labor may seem like a daunting task, there are a few available visas employers and organizations can choose from. As an immigration attorney specializing in employment-based immigration law, Rachel is an expert on the subject. Today, we break down what some of these options are, how the upcoming presidential election could change that process, and she shares her advice to employers. Let's get into this month's interview, hearing first her background and connection to the Midwest.
Again, my name is Rachel Beardsley. I'm a partner with Fragaman, which is the world's largest and leading immigration services firm. My focus on the agricultural sector has come quite naturally to me because I grew up in Denison, Iowa. I went to Iowa State for undergrad. And as I pursued my career in immigration, my interest really flowed back to the agricultural sector. So I really enjoy working with agricultural companies and advising on their immigration programs.
So with Fragaman being the largest immigration firm in the world, I'm sure you get a lot of exposure and different stories and things like that. So I'm excited to learn more about that from you today. But you mentioned that you like to take a holistic approach when it comes to immigration and visas from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
So usually we're working with executives from the company, legal departments, HR, to really look at what are their business needs from a talent acquisition and talent retention perspective? So certainly we do handle individual visa applications, but more broadly, taking a step back to see what needs does the company have and how can immigration help to meet those needs?
I appreciated too, you mentioned that you do look at it from a business perspective because there are political and humanitarian and other considerations to take. But from your perspective and for the discussion today, we're really focusing on it from a business perspective. So when you think about the immigration journey, talk to me about what are all the different types of visa options that may be applicable to people who work within the swine industry looking for some outside help?
Of course. So I actually represent a lot of companies in the pork production area. And the good news is that there are a lot of different visas available. It's an alphabet soup, if you will, of visa categories. And we do see agricultural employers really looking to international students as a great pipeline of talent. So for international students, typically they're here on the F visa, the F1 visa. So while the student is studying at a university, they can apply for an internship visa that's called the Curricular Practical Training or CPT. So that could be for an internship during the semester or during the summer. After graduation, a student can apply for work authorization under optional practical training or OPT. So that's valid for at least 1 year, and it can be extended for an additional 2 years if the person has a degree in science, technology, engineering, or mathematics. The administration actually expanded the STEM degrees within the last 2 years, so they added 30 degree programs beyond what was already designated in the STEM program. So it's great news for international students because then they have a longer runway to find an employer and to find a different work visa for longer employment in the United States. It's also great for employers because the student applies for the F1 work authorization through the university. So it's very streamlined and easy from the employer's perspective. But some of the most common ones we see are the TN visa. So that's available to Canadian and Mexican nationals in certain occupations. The great news for the agricultural sector is that there are a lot of science-based TN categories. So for pork producers, many times we use the animal breeder category, animal scientist, veterinarian, just to name a few. We also see the H-2 visa being utilized. So that's for non-professional roles, and that's for seasonal work. So if an employer needs has a peak load need where they need more workers beyond their typical workforce, that can be a great option. And there are other options that we look at. So if, depending on the person's nationality, there may be other nationality-based visas, like an E3 for Australians or an H1B1 for Chilean nationals. Those are some other categories. Last but not least, there's the H1B visa for professional workers. So that's great in that it's universal and it applies to any nationality and any professional role that requires at least a bachelor's degree. The challenge that we see is that the H-1B is subject to an annual cap or quota. And so with the strong economic conditions, we're seeing a very high demand for H-1B visa numbers, and it's been about a 25% selection rate in the lottery over the last few years. So certainly we do look to the H-1B as a visa option, but we're also looking to alternative visa categories just because we can't bank that the H-1B will be available.
Why has this administration, you think, placed such a heavy emphasis on those STEM students specifically?
The administration is prioritizing STEM talent more broadly. So certainly there's been a focus on STEM talent. It seems as though the demand for STEM talent has exploded, and there are just so many different STEM roles. So the U.S. needs to attract and retain that talent. Also, in graduate STEM programs, we see, there are some reports that in graduate programs, over half the students are international students in STEM programs. And so it's such a loss for the U.S. if those international students have to leave the states after they graduate. So the F1 program is an area that the administration has focused on. They've also prioritized STEM talent through the O-1 Extraordinary Ability category and then a green card category called the National Interest Waiver.
Yeah, so then as you think about that third category, the green card or the permanent based employment, give us a little bit more about what those categories look like.
Sure. So for the green card process, this is for permanent residents in the United States. So it's distinguished from the temporary visas that allow a person to live and work in the U.S. for a certain period of time, but then ultimately they need to return to their home country. With the green card process, there are a few different employment-based options, one of which is the National Interest Waiver. So that is a longstanding category, although it's become much more popular recently with the administration's focus on STEM talent and their instruction to immigration officers to really prioritize STEM workers in the National Interest Waiver applications that they review. So for the National Interest Waiver category, it needs to be an industry or an area that is of national importance to the United States. The good news is that agriculture is always of national importance. Everybody wants to eat and have food on the table. So that's the first prong. The second prong is that the person needs to have a master's degree or a bachelor's degree and 5 years of experience. So certainly it does need to be a professional role, but it does not need to be an executive level role. So for our clients who are pork producers, we've had success for farm manager roles, for example, where we've done successful NIW petitions for those farm manager positions. And then the third and final prong is showing that on balance, it's a benefit to the United States to waive the normal labor certification process that would be required. So I know the National Interest Waiver, it sounds very lofty, but in practice and really on the ground, we're seeing a lot of success for agricultural filings. The second most common employment-based category for the green card process is the labor certification or perm process. So that's a three-step process. The first step is a labor market test where the employer needs to advertise for the position and recruit. The standard under which they're reviewing those applicants is whether there were any minimally qualified U.S. workers who applied for the role. So fundamentally, the government is trying to protect U.S. workers and make sure that there's not a minimally qualified U.S. worker who's willing and able to fill the role. But the good news for employers is that if there are multiple positions open, the advertisements can also reflect that. So if an employer has 10 positions open, they can hire that U.S. worker, and they could also still sponsor the international worker because the need is there. Likewise, with that batching, it's great for employers because then it really helps to contain costs. So if an employer has, multiple positions open in the same location, they can do one set of recruitment that covers all of those roles rather than doing individualized recruitment for each and every role. So that's the first step of the labor certification process. The second step is the immigrant visa petition, which is the offer of permanent employment based on the approved perm application. And then the third and final step is adjustment of status, which is the individual's personal application for the green card.
So how does this work with each position being advertised by law?
So the Department of Labor requires the employer to post advertisements. So there's a job order with the State Workforce Agency. There are two Sunday newspaper ads. And there may be other recruitment forms that the Department of Labor requires, like website postings. So the employer is required to pay for those. So that's why it's advantageous if they can batch those together, then they're really containing costs versus having to pay for advertisements for each and every role.
I know this is going to be a loaded question because every operation is different, but how do you go about determining what of those solutions that you just briefly walked through with the visas and then longer term green card solutions, how do you determine what is the best fit for that operation?
It depends on the employer's needs and what the employer is looking for. So certainly if it's a very temporary need, then maybe the H2 is the best fit. If there's a desire and a need to keep a worker longer term, then they would likely look to one of the longer term work visas or even the green card. You know, we see employers use the green card process to reward top performers. So they want it to be a prize for those top performers. Also, it's a really to mitigate risks within the business where let's say that an employer has a very senior person who's on a visa. It would be massively disruptive if that person couldn't renew his or her visa. So from a key man or key person perspective, the business may want to sponsor that person just because they don't want to risk and have a business interruption.
So we were kind of starting to dig into the steps for permanent residency. Can you walk through that labor certification process?
Yes. Yeah, so just diving into further detail there, the employer needs to describe the position that's open. So the job title, the job description, and the requirements for the role. So they do need to be very specific in terms of the education, years of experience, and skills that are needed, and that draft of the job description and requirements really serves as the blueprint for the entire green card process. So the job description and requirements are placed in a prevailing wage request that's filed with the Department of Labor. That takes about 6 months to be issued. And that same language is included in the recruitment. So the advertisements include the job description and requirements just to apprise U.S. workers of the open position. So then when the employer's reviewing applicants, they're reviewing against the requirements that they set forth for the role. So that process can take anywhere from 8 to 12 months. It's very lengthy to prepare the perm application for filing. And once it's submitted to the Department of Labor, it's taking them about 12 to 13 months to review the perm application. So it's a very lengthy process, but once the employer gets over that first hurdle of the perm filing, usually the second and third steps of the green card process are straightforward.
Rachel, looking out to the 2024 presidential election, what could that impact have on the immigration process for agricultural workers?
We look at this through a few different lenses. So from an adjudication perspective, if Ms. Harris is elected, we would expect policies that are similar to what we've seen under the Biden administration. The Biden administration has returned to what's called a deference policy, so where the Immigration Service gives deference to its own prior approvals. So that gives predictability for employers. So when they're filing for an extension for someone, they can expect for it to be approved because the first application was approved. And that's actually been the longstanding policy of the Immigration Service. The exception was during the Trump administration. The prior Trump administration had phased out the deference policy. And so what that meant was there was there were more requests for evidence, more audits. So cases were still getting approved at the end of the day, but it was just there was added time to it and also added costs. So that's one area where we could see some differences. The Republican administration has indicated that they may want to phase down or phase out the H-2 program. So certainly that could impact agricultural employers if that comes to fruition. And we could see changes with the STEM programs that we've been discussing. So again, if Ms. Harris is elected, we would expect for those policies prioritizing STEM talent to continue. I think that would be in question if Mr. Trump is reelected.
So with that in mind, ahead of the election, what are you recommending to folks in consideration for visas prior to the election?
We're recommending to employers to, first and foremost, to file any applications. So if they're on the fence about starting the green card or sponsoring someone for a visa, we're recommending to file now just because employers like predictability and they like transparency. They don't want surprises. And so we are recommending to submit those applications now just because a change in the White House could, of course, result in changes in policies. We're also recommending to, just to make sure that from an employer perspective, that their house is in order. And so what I mean by that is, looking at your I-9 forms, do you have all of the I-9s in order? And just doing an internal audit to do those checks of, okay, do we have all the paperwork? Do we need to go back and check anything? Do we need to engage outside counsel to help us with that audit? Just making sure that from a compliance perspective, everything is in order.
Are there any other areas related to visas we could see a change in with the upcoming presidential election?
Another area that we could see changes in is from a humanitarian perspective. So the Biden administration recently proposed two new humanitarian programs, the first of which is for the spouses of U.S. citizens. So this would be for spouses who do not have status, and it would be a pathway where those spouses of U.S. citizens would be able to apply for a green card through a program called Parole in Place. The second program would be for individuals who have graduated from a U.S. university but do not have status. So taking a step back, both of these programs are really aimed at individuals who came to the U.S. as children and have been here sometimes for decades, but where they still don't have status because they came without a visa. So the goal of these two programs is to help some of those individuals, again, who came as children, to normalize their status. So, again, if Ms. Harris is elected, we would expect for those programs to continue. If Mr. Trump is reelected, we would expect for those programs to be phased out.
Well, that's it for another edition of the PIGX podcast. From how this election may lengthen or shorten to potentially changing opportunities for agricultural companies to hire foreign help, we certainly appreciate Rachel's insight for this subject and thank her for her time joining on the podcast today. And thanks to all of you for tuning in as well. Be sure to hit subscribe and come back next month for another timely episode on all things swine. Until then, I'm Delaney Howell, and this has been the PIGX Podcast.
PIGX is a national podcast hosted by the Pig Livability Project partners at Iowa State University, Kansas State University, and Purdue, and supported by the Iowa Pork Industry Center. For more information on the project, head to www.piglivability.org, or to inquire directly with questions regarding the project, email ipic.iastate.edu. PIGX, ideas in the swine industry worth sharing.